Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Coming up on the program this week,
language is a big barrier. I've worked with clients who don't speak English. So, and they rarely leave their houses sometimes, or their flats or their neighborhoods.
It must help you to be able to go, well, actually, if we could get all these things lined up and supportive, that actually, I imagine that makes your job as a psychotherapist a lot easier, because then that support network can come around an individual and they don't feel like they're isolated, alone, and without a voice, because you've not only given them the voice, but you've also surrounded them with the people who need to be there.
Now SEAD offers therapy in 24 different languages, and new languages are being added every day as we get more and more therapists, counselors.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organizations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
We are the home of the UK's conversation about mental health. Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name's Mick, and I hope you're well. Thanks for checking out episode 249. And before I tell you a little bit more about what's coming up in this week's episode, I'm going to tell you what's coming up for episode 250. Got a little bit of breaking news for you here on the podcast. So episode 250, a huge landmark for the programme, marking more than 5 years of Mental Health Monday, a weekly podcast. It's been great 5 years, but we're not stopping now. We carry on, absolutely. And actually, a great opportunity for you to be part of episode 250, because we're going to do it in front of a live audience. I'm really looking forward to this. It's going to be fantastic. There is a mental health summit taking place in Liverpool on May the 9th, and it is looking at mental health within the workplace, set up by the Liverpool City Region and the Metro Mayor, Steve Rotherham. It'll look at how we can make sure that people's lives are best set to be successful and happy, but at the same time, to make sure that businesses can thrive and that employees are happy within a workplace, that we're creating the right environment for people to thrive in and out of work. Now, as part of that, I'm going to be interviewing on stage the creator of the TV show The Responder, starring Martin Freeman. Tony Schumacher wrote The Responder, and just so happens I've known Tony for a number of years. He's always a great talker, so it should be a fascinating insight. I'm not going to do any spoilers for The Responder itself, but it focuses on the mental health of a police officer who is a responder, and how he copes or doesn't cope given the world around him. He's also going through therapy as part of the program as well. So it reflects on Tony's life and real life experiences. So we'll explore that on stage on the day. Now, there are links on my Twitter feed at Mr. Mick Coyle. That's on Twitter. There's also through the Liverpool City Region Combined Authority Facebook page, links there about how you can get involved in the day itself. It should be a really fascinating day right across the day. I know Jake Mills, a friend of the show, he's involved in some of the talks. There's a couple of workshops that are ongoing as well, and it should be great right on the Liverpool waterfront. So quite a prestigious occasion. Episode 250 of Mental Health Monday with myself, Mick Coyle, interviewing Tony Schumacher up on stage. There are links in the write-up to this podcast about where you can get hold of tickets and find out some more information. Good, eh? Told you we'd have something good for episode 250. Now, episode 249 comes at the start of Mental Health Awareness Week, and it's, again, always looking to find new angles on the programme and to maybe look at things from a different point of view, a different point of view we haven't thought about, haven't touched on before. Today we're going to speak to the team from NAFSIAT. Now, NAFSIAT are based in Archway in London, and they are an organisation that provides intercultural therapy for people from various different backgrounds, and incredibly does it in more than 20 different languages. It's been running for a number of decades now and has got a brilliant track record in supporting people. We're going to be speaking to Ali Donat, who's one of the psychotherapists there. He's from Turkey, but they've got people who speak languages from right across the globe, because of course as a global nation that the UK is, there are people who come to this country who have issues with their mental health, and of course they have to get them sorted out. And we talk about barriers around mental health provision. What bigger barrier if you can't speak the language or you can't communicate how you're feeling because of language difficulties, which is why NAFSIAT service is absolutely incredible. I've got a link to NAFSIAT's website. That's NAFSIAT, NAFSIAT.org.uk to find out more information about the work that they do. That's NAFSIAT.org.uk. There's a link at the bottom of the podcast for that too. I started off by talking to Ali about what the service was and how it came about.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, Mick. This is very exciting for me to be talking about Nafsiyat, which is a project of work that I do that's very close to my heart. Well, Nafsiyat was started in 1983, in the early 80s, by a man named Jafar Karim. And he was a medical professional, a doctor, studied in India, and came to work at the NHS. And he saw that ethnic minorities, you know, people from different religious beliefs, cultural backgrounds, didn't really have the same access to mental health treatment as, you know, white British people. That provides free psychotherapy to individuals in their own language as much as possible. And the scale of it is really, you can correlate it with language, which is fascinating. Nafsiyat offers 24 different languages, therapy in 24 different languages, and new languages are being added every day as we get more and more therapists, counselors to come work for us. Currently, there are around 35 therapists that work for Nafsiyat. That includes volunteers, trainees, full-time and part-time counselors. And just to give you maybe an idea of the outreach, Nafsiyat has an encatchment area of a number of boroughs around, well, the center is located in Archway. So last year, Nafsiyat saw 365 clients. Each client gets up to 12 sessions of therapy. And then there are other projects at Nafsiyat, which, you know, if you want me to talk about that, there's training projects, there's other brief interventions that Nafsiyat offers. Yeah, so I think that's a good snapshot of the scale of Nafsiyat, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting that so many times, Ali, we talk about people using language or finding the language to talk about how they feel, talk about their mental health. And so many people don't have that language because they've not grown up in a culture where, you know, they've been encouraged to talk about their sense of feelings. And actually, what's really interesting with you guys is that there's the extra hurdle that people not only have to find the language, but they have to find the language in another language as well. So with you guys, that makes it so much easier and probably reflects as well the cultural diversities which exist in sort of major UK cities, particularly in London, as has been the case for a large number of years now.
Yes, absolutely. I think there's great power in talking to someone in your own language, I think. An interesting fact I always come across is some of the clients I see at Nafsiyat, they have experiences with having therapy through an interpreter in the UK. And they've, you know, almost all of them have said that creates some sort of a barrier between them and the therapist, not to mention the fact that there's a third person in the room. So they may feel like they can't really open up. And then, yes, we come to talking about your mental health issues or, you know, talking about how you feel in that language. I think even for, you know, native speakers, it requires some level of, you know, experience to talk about feelings and yourself. Yeah,
absolutely. You don't have to look very far, Ali, to look at sort of people from different backgrounds, particularly from different parts of the world who've arrived in the UK, and you look at inequality and you look at access to various different services, and you even things like, you know, access to vaccine uptake and various things like that. And often you'll find that the majority sit within the sort of the white British population. And then there's the peripheries of people who maybe struggle to access services or don't have the connections with those local services within a local community. And either as a symptom of or, of course, whatever, they find themselves in much more difficult circumstances in life as well. And that will, no doubt, have a huge impact on their mental health as well. And I think you guys have clearly identified that with inequality comes risks to people, comes, you know,
problems with their long-term mental health as well. And that's something that you put front and center, but it's obviously a vital service.
Absolutely. Actually, what you've just touched on is a very good point. The inequality in accessing these services. I think on a human level, what I've seen is also, it's very interesting. There's a level of fear in engaging with services, because when you're an ethnic minority, often immigrants who come to this country, who don't speak the language as comfortably, there's a, you know, accessing services is about engaging with authority. And often, okay, white majority or the government. And there's, I see that there's a level of fear around that, you know, going to doctors, going to, you know, whatever government offices. So mental health practitioners become a part of that. They represent sometimes the government, the majority, you know, these services that people actually have fears around engaging with. Even something so basic as receiving letters. I found that a lot of immigrant populations in London that I've worked with, they have real fear around opening official letters.
That's got to be crucial then in terms of the work you do, that you've got to create a culture of openness, but trust has got to be a huge part of that, hasn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that's where the intercultural or cultural elements come into play, where you have, I mean, this is actually a hotly debated issue, how sort of Western psychotherapy, you know, has a very white male orientation in terms of training, in terms of all the theories. But then when you're engaging with ethnic minorities, you need to look through through an intercultural lens. So that would mean, exactly like you pointed out, if I'm engaging with, you know, most of my clients and now set up in Turkish clients. So when I'm engaging with them, it's kind of different. So I might go outside some of the traditional sort of theories and what we've been taught in training in the West. In terms of bringing them into therapy, because every culture, every group of people place psychotherapists in a different position in their own cultures. So they might perceive you as someone, somewhat of a healer or a GP or someone like that. So, or a community worker. So if the part of the culture requires you to become part of the community and engage with them in a way that they would find it helpful, they would be comfortable coming into to Nafsiyat. That's what it's about, I think.
That's really, really interesting, because actually it strikes me that so often the conversation around mental health, particularly around white middle-aged guys, is often culturally from a UK point of view, it's about perceived success in life, and you know whether it's, you know, are you in a marriage that, you know, has survived a divorce, and with that can obviously become problems? Do you have a good job? Do you have a nice house? Do you earn money? Can you live in this world? But it's very much framed around the success of what essentially capitalism. But is it, you must have examples though of people whose life world is framed by just other things, obviously health and sort of success of various different kinds is important to so many people, but you must get a sense of different types of drivers, different types of worlds and mindsets that various different people bring.
Absolutely. And that's actually, I mean, it's so interesting and exciting to do work in Nafsiyat, to get in and be let into this world. Of different cultures and different peoples, and to experience that and to try to understand it. So you're absolutely right. With different cultures, there are different themes, different drivers. I find that, and again, we need to be mindful of the fact that the people we see at Nafsiyat, the clients, they're in the UK. They're taken out of their own hometown or home cultures, or their second generation. They're here in the UK. That creates an added layer of experience, added layer of drivers. But I find Things like family, you know, family systems are hugely important. And you might think, you know, great example, if you know, you came to a therapy session or someone else will be talking about their careers and capitalist drivers, as you put it. Whereas for someone in a different culture, family might be in the front and center of their life and their driving force. You know, things like parenthood, children, sense of community, religion and spirituality are huge. So these are some of the themes that, you know, I'd like to be mindful of, to understand, you know, there isn't a single lens or single sort of thing that we can look through to understand everyone. You know, you have to be open to different interpretations, different drivers. Yeah.
Let me ask you sort of a slightly different version of that same question then, which is what is that? What that theme that you touched on, you know, family or maybe like community, are those the threads? You must get a sense of what those human threads that pass through us all, maybe a sense that we all want to feel like we're part of something, whatever that thing is, from wherever we're from, that we all feel like we're part of something, maybe.
Well, you've touched upon something. Again, I've experienced very early on at Nowset. I've been with Nowset for 3 years. And the single most important thing that I take away from my work with Nowset is, yes, the common ground, the common threads that sort of bind us all. Because I was so shocked. I still am, I guess, surprised whenever I start with a new client. The differences, the cultural differences that exist, even with people from my own culture, with Turkish people, that's been the most astonishing thing. You know, you might think, okay, here's a Turkish person, they speak Turkish, well, let's put the two of you in a room. Well, Turkey is a very diverse country. There are many different people from different religions, different cultural backgrounds, different languages. And to experience that with a simple hello, you know, even from the way you say, hello, how are you doing? Take a seat. All of a sudden, all those differences are in the room. How do you work with that? I often think, okay, there is no way me and this person, you know, are even on the same, in the same world sometimes. You know, I might get ideas like that. And then I think it's my job to understand them, to really explore their world with them. And then without a doubt, at the end of you know, a few sessions or at the end of my their therapy sessions, I always come away thinking, okay, yes, there are those threads.
Yeah.
You know, whatever the cultural differences are, whatever the age, status, class, gender, whatever those are, there are those common threads that bind us, that really make us human.
I like the idea that, you know, you'd meet someone, they're from Turkey, same age as you, male, maybe they've got family, whatever. And then you think, well, I'm probably going to get on with this person. And then maybe you get in a room, one of you is a Beşiktaş fan, the other supports Galatasaray. And then suddenly you realize, whoa, hang on a minute, we might have a problem. But actually, the themes are all there about, you know, love of football, love of supporting your team and all that kind of stuff. Maybe Trabzonspor we should be talking about in terms of Turkish football at the moment. That's a different conversation, though, slightly early. Can I ask you about intercultural therapy? Can I ask you about this? Because, of course, when you've got individuals who are coming in, you know, the 24 languages to 35 different people, but for it to be an intercultural therapy, I wonder what the crossover points are, you know, the things that make people feel like they're part of something when they come through your door. Or if you are able to sort of either through the services that you have sort of connect people who are from different types of backgrounds so that it's not just a bespoke local service for people from a particular background and everyone's on their own, that it's an intercultural thing, that people start to come together through the work that Nafsiat does.
How are different, you know, the way I understand that question, the way I think about that question is, how are differences then worked out in the room? What if there are differences in the room? And this is, again, a major topic in intercultural therapy. And what Jafar Karim, the founder of Nafsiyat, as he has put it beautifully by saying, you bring the whole person into the therapy room. So you look at the whole person, the therapist and the client. So in order to really to work through issues, in order to really understand, those differences must be brought into the room to be worked out. And this is, I think this is really what separates an intercultural therapist or a therapist that's oriented towards intercultural issues from just any other psychotherapist, because I try to understand what those differences are. And it requires a lot of training, a lot of practice to be able to bring those differences in. You know, what happens if there's a white therapist and a black client, or a therapist and client from different religions, different cultures? You know, how are those worked through in the room? I think that's very important, and that it really underlines the word intercultural therapy, because it's not to say that as therapists or Nafsiyat picks and chooses the most suitable client. Okay, yes, there are language and there are, you know, other considerations, but often actually it's opposite to what you might think. You might think, you know, okay, this person would benefit from working through these cultural issues from somebody who's from a completely different or an opposite culture.
I think that's really, yeah. I think that's really interesting. It just goes to show that the sort of the balancing that you have to do when people come to your door, because it's not just about going, well, we need a Turkish speaker, so here's a Turkish psychotherapist. It's about, well, what are the issues? Who's the right person to speak to? And language, I guess, is a barrier you've got to overcome, but then you're dealing with the person, you know, and the conversations that need to come. Can I ask you this? In terms of the sort of issues that you're dealing with for people from various different backgrounds, though I'm sure there will be people who have issues the same as someone, a native UK English speaker might have, what might be the same as people who are immigrants maybe, or don't speak English as a first language. But are there issues that you have to deal with through Nafsiyat that are specific to the fact that people are maybe coming from a different country, that they may have experienced difficult things, that they may have had difficult journeys to get here? And of course, when they do get here, the culturally things are different.
Yes, absolutely. And I think I'll give you a little bit of background on how we sort of intake clients. They go through what we call an assessment session, one or two sessions with a psychotherapist where they, it's not a traditional psychotherapy session. It's more about getting facts and their background and what are, you know, some of the issues that they want to work on in therapy. And there it's really, we're looking at a number of things like what you said, that would be important for therapy, but also for addressing some of the recurring themes, recurring problems or issues that we see with, you know, either minorities or immigrants in this country. Absolutely, issues around or information that's about where they're from, their hometown, their home culture, but also how they got here. Were they refugees or were they... did they go through any hardship coming here? Were they illegal immigrants? Were they legal immigrants? What did the UK take and what did it require? And what sort of an experience was that? And then things around their living conditions here. You know, are they... do they have needs around, you know, accessing social services? Again, what we were talking about, how maybe sometimes minorities or immigrants have difficulties accessing some of, you know, government services. Nafsiyat will then put them in touch with, you know, social services or whoever would be best positioned to help them in other areas. Things like accessing benefits, housing, what is their, what are the living situation like? I think I told you about childcare, mobility, disability issues. Those are some of the, again, we're looking for issues around accessing, you know, care and government assistance and things of that nature, and coming to therapy. Again, as I've said, language is a big barrier. I've worked with clients who don't speak English. So, and they rarely leave their houses sometimes or their flats or their neighborhoods. How will they come to Nafsiyat to see you face to face? So again, these are not issues that you might readily sort of think about when you're you know, engaging with a native speaker or a you know, white British person, for example. But these are some of the issues that you need to be mindful of.
No, absolutely. I think that's huge as well, because you might look at a person who's got problems. They might be identified as needing support, but language is a problem. Understanding of where they're from and what they've been through is a problem. They then don't have either the trust or the ability to communicate. And yet an organization like Nafsiyat comes on board, the language barrier disappears. And also, it must be a great thing as a psychotherapist to be able to identify issues which housing, childcare, job, whatever it would be, the benefit system must help you to be able to go, well, actually, if we could get all these things lined up and supportive, that actually I imagine that makes your job as a psychotherapist a lot easier, because then that support network can come around an individual and they don't feel like they're isolated, alone, and without a voice, because you've not only given them the voice, but you've also surrounded them with the people who need to be there.
Absolutely. You know, as a psychotherapist in private practice, I have my own private practice as well. You come into people's lives in a you know, very small cross section. You can be a part of their support network, but you're not in charge of that team most of the time. But as you said, Nafsiyat will provide, I think, or is mindful of the level of support that that person is receiving or has access to, or has information about that support. I think traditionally, GPs in this country do a great job of doing that, of really speaking to their patients to really understand if they're getting the right support. And I think they're also mindful of the existence of Nafsiyat in the catchment area. Say, what would really help this person, in addition to the medical help I'm providing them, to go and see somebody in their own language and get help.
There must be GPs across the country, if they heard that, were going, I wish we had that. There must be GPs going, this is a Nafsiyat thing. I understand. We know just the right people. Let's put you onto to Nafsiyat. I think that's really, really interesting. And the change and the difference it must make to people's lives must be absolutely huge. Can you, I won't ask for anyone's name or anything like that, but could you maybe give us a sense, if you can, Ali, of what people say to you at the end of a 6 or 12 weeks series of conversations, maybe, about the difference that having the conversations and to, you know, get involved in an organization like Nafsiyat has actually had on their lives?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been really, an amazing experience for me to witness some of the changes or some of the ending conversations I've had with clients. You know, a lot of people might think, okay, 6 or 12 sessions is not much. You know, what can you really achieve? But when you think about, again, I think this is an accurate description of some of my clients. Some of them don't leave their flats. Again, don't speak English. You know, they have rarely left their flats in, 10, 15, 20 years. And if you then think about some of the cultural issues, speaking to If you're a woman from like a Turkish or Middle Eastern background, for example, speaking to a man that is not in your family, in a therapeutic setting, it's hugely different. It's a very different experience, and to have the privilege to be able to do that with somebody, it's amazing. And at the end of the 12 weeks, I think most of the time, the real interesting feedback I get is that they haven't really experienced something like this in their lives, or that they've, their eyes have been open to what's available, or, you know, what they can talk about, what kind of relationships they can have. They come away thinking, okay, this is something new that I've experienced, and it's changed.
And does that give them the ability to change the way they interact with the world? You know, if they've not been able to leave a house, or they've not felt comfortable engaging or accessing services, do you get a sense that actually maybe after a series of sessions with an organization like yours, that they are able to do that, go and find fulfilling things to do in life?
I really hope they do. I don't, usually not in their lives after they're done with their therapy at NAFS yet, but it's very interesting that a lot of them do come back. A lot of clients do come back. There is a period, cooling off period, I think. You have to wait a few months, and then you can re-refer yourself for another, say, 12 sessions. And it's been really amazing to see clients coming back and to see the change over time. Someone I could have seen 2 years ago, to see them again. I'm not with clients in the real world, but to really witness even the desire to come back, even the openness to come back to therapy, I think is a testament to the success of NAFSIAT.
And how do you notice that difference? Is it the way they smile, the way they dress, the way they stand, the way they sit? What is it that you notice?
It's not very huge and it's not very overt, but the very fact that they're walking through the door is noticeable, I think. I don't think people. Clients at NAFSIA or psychotherapy clients in general, they don't really come into the therapy room doing pirouettes. But the very fact that somebody is willing to come to therapy, to open up, to explore their inner world, I think that's the clue, the sign.
No, I think so, and I think as well a sign that when people do engage with therapy services, they actually think, even if they don't need it for an emergency situation anymore, that actually that they found the overall process to be a positive one. And if the offer is there to continue with that and to further explore, that people will take that opportunity, which says to me, Ali, that when people explore their own well-being, when people explore their own minds and some of the issues maybe that they've been carrying with them, that it can become both therapeutic, but also beneficial in the long run, that people think, well, it's worth not just tackling, a past trauma or something I've dealt with, but actually to have an ongoing conversation with my own mind about how I'm feeling, how I'm getting on, how I view myself in 5 or 10 years' time. And that gives me a sense that that's very much the case with everyone, no matter where they're from.
And I think people don't realize that therapy takes a level of practice. Finding the language to express yourself, your emotions, doing a level of self-discovery, you don't get that in the first session. You need practice, you need time to experience those emotions. So I guess you're absolutely right. Anyone who comes in over a long period of time, the change, the most noticeable change is in the language, the language and the ease in which they express themselves.
Absolutely. I'm going to point people in the direction of the website, nafsiat.org.uk is the website, nafsiat.org.uk. I'll also put a link there at the bottom of the podcast so people can click directly on the link, find out more about the work that they do and the intercultural Therapy Center. Ali Donat, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate your time today. Thanks for joining us on the podcast, and brilliant work that you do in 24 different languages, you and the team. And thanks for joining us on Mental Health Monday.
Thank you very much for having me on. Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.